Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And I'm about 3 days back from Palm Springs, where we just wrapped up our 5th annual Ecom Camp. We do 2 big events per year for our community, for the Ecom Fuel community. And this one is it's a smaller, more intimate event that we do for our 8- and 9-figure revenue sellers inside the community. And so we had about 60 people converge on Palm Springs. It was funny. We did it right between the Coachella weekends. And Coachella, I didn't know this, big music festival, but they do 2 weekends. And then in the middle, there's this dead period. And so we're all flying into the airport and we get off the plane and it looks like MTV is, you know, holding their rehearsals for the real world there. And the airport just blown up with 20-something people. Look like they just, you know, are on the backside of a rave. Anyway, we went and didn't take over, but joined a cool little resort, the Parker, and just spent 2 or 3 days hanging out and eating meals together, talking about what was working. We had a number of people present about what was happening in their business. And less so, man, I have found the more and more we do events, the more you can have something be a conversation, an actual communal sit down and share, and the less you can have it feel like someone's giving a speech at the UN, the better it is. And so we had a lot of informal talks. We also took some time to go out and have some fun together. The big thing was we went to this, outside of Palm Springs, there's this place called the BMW Race Experience. And they've got a track, they've got a bunch of fun cars, and they teach you how to drive these things. And so we went way too fast in cars, raced against each other, had the competition that comes, few things bond entrepreneurs like a good competition. So that was a ton of fun. But yeah, and today I want to share with you some of the things I learned from the camp, from the attendees. All of the sessions, it's all confidential, so I can't talk about specifics out of respect for the people who came and shared. But there are a lot of meta lessons and patterns that I noticed that I think they're hugely valuable to share coming out of this event while I can still respect what, you know, people's sensitivity in their businesses and confidentiality. So anyway, that's what we're talking about today. I'm pumped to share a few things with you and I think you'll enjoy. Before we dive in, every year we survey members of the Ecom Fuel private community, our group of 7- and 8-figure store owners, and we ask them everything. What do your revenues look like? Margins, traffic, operations, AI impact, hiring, all of it. This year, 300 store owners representing $3.5 billion in combined revenue weighed in, and the picture looks pretty different than it did a year ago. Some of what we found was surprising, some of it was kind of alarming, and all of it will change how you think about building an e-commerce business today. The Trends Report is free. Go grab it at ecommercefuel.com/blueprint if you'd like to learn more. All right, let's get into it. So I got 5-ish takeaways from our e-com camp. The first one is, if you're building a business, most of us do not have an 8- or 9-figure business. I think it's tempting or easy to look at people who have gotten there and say, oh man, there's some kind of secret sauce. They know something I don't know. They've got some kind of black hat, not black hat, but like something they're doing that's special. They come to events like this and they share all the secret skull and crossbones tactics they're using. And by and large, I would say, completely, there's no big tactical secrets, right? The sessions that we had were not like, hey, here's the thing we're doing that no one else knows about, or here's this edge that we figured out, don't tell anyone else because it's how we're building our business. I'd say actually, one of the things at the end of the event, everyone gets up and stands up and kind of shares, maybe some reflections on the event and what they learned. And I remember one person standing up and saying, I was surprised. I actually didn't talk about business as much as I thought I would. I was talking more about life and trade-offs and personal things and what comes next after you've built something really meaningful like this, at least financially meaningfully. And so I think that's something that's important to know. It's not tactical secrets. And it's interesting seeing how those conversations go deeper the bigger businesses get. Because part of it, I think, is you build a business like that and you realize, wow, okay, this is great and financial success is great, but there's, more important things too that you're thinking about in tandem with keeping this business going. So that was one of the big things. That said, I think I don't think, I know that many of the owners, if not most of the owners that are there, are still very tactical. They're very connected. There was maybe a handful of owners that were kind of like, you know, laid back, managing things from 50, 60,000 feet. But I'd say just as many, if not more, were very in tune with the details. Like I know there was one owner of a business doing, you know, 60 plus million per year, mostly with organic traffic, which was amazing, that was regularly plugged in and even helping the social teams post on their social channels to keep kind of a finger on the pulse. Another, you know, very large owner and successful owner, this is the owner of the company, was spending a ton of time doing AI coding, you know, hours and hours and hours a day. He has developers, but he's getting in there. He's in the weeds. He's understanding what's working. And the more I learn about business and the more I learn about successful businesses, it's tempting to think about, like, if you're from the EOS framework, there's this idea of, oh, hey, you've got the integrator and then you've got the visionary. The visionary is like the CEO driving the vision of the business, the manager, kind of high up. And then you've got the integrator who is really in the weeds making things work. And not that you can't have both, but I think it is much, I think there is a little bit of a fallacy that you can continue to grow and continue to do really well and just kind of stay removed. The most successful businesses and owners and products have owners that are in the trenches. Maybe they're not doing everything, but they deeply understand what's going on at every level of their business. And they're very, very tactical. Another thing that surprised me was this is our event for larger businesses. And we've had a number of members come for all 5 years. It's really cool doing events like this over the years because they start to compound, and just like capital compounds, relationships compound. And so seeing the same people 3, 4, 5 years in a row, seeing them get to know each other and start to do cool trips and just have that rapport from day one is awesome. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that the businesses, even though it's a group for bigger businesses, because I have this track record of seeing them, that they're getting meaningfully bigger. The number of businesses I was surprised to hear had hit, you know, 30 million, 3 or 4 hit 50 million, I wasn't expecting, was pretty, stood out to me. And I think, you know, when you look at larger businesses, with the trends report that we just wrapped up for Econ Fuel, bigger businesses are doing better. You know, that they're more optimistic. They seem to be a little bit more profitable. And so anyway, what are the takeaways between those two data points for us here? I think size, and maybe this isn't a huge shocker, but size has always been a moat. There's definitely downsides to size. Man, that's a tongue twister. For your example, it's easier to let stuff slip through the crack. Bigger companies can't move as fast, et cetera, et cetera. But I think size is a moat in today's world, not just because of the economies of scale, but because you've got an established brand, an established customer list, you've got some momentum, and it's getting harder to build that in the current e-commerce environment. So that's one thing. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if multiples on existing businesses in the space are going to go up from e-com because of that. That'll be something that's fun to watch over the next, you know, 2, 3 years. But the other thing that stuck with me is it gave me a sense of how valuable it is to stick with something for the, you know, for the long term. One of my big beliefs is that you should try to build a business that you can run and enjoy 80% of the time for 10 plus years. And seeing some of these businesses that started at, you know, that came into our first e-com camp at like barely over the 10 million mark, and now are pushing $30, $40 million or higher is pretty cool to just see that compounding happen over time. So anyway, a couple of just random kind of in the air reflections there, but thought it was worth mentioning. But third takeaway for me is, you know, for probably 3 or 4 years now, I feel like community has been this buzzword. Like, oh, hey, you know, community is this huge advantage and it can help you build an e-commerce business. And I felt like the examples were pretty few and far between. I am hugely biased too, right? Like I run a community of e-com store owners and I do think it's valuable, but I feel like at this e-com camp, I saw numerous examples of where someone was actually leveraging their community to build a meaningful 8-figure business. You know, one person was generating million of unique views organically via community that they had built, small private communities, kind of a network of them. Another one used this community that they had built up and they had nurtured and connected with people into a industry leading brand in like 4 or 5 short years. And even Ecom Camp, you know, I would say that we probably had maybe a third of the people there were New Time members, and probably at least half of them only had come because someone else at the event convinced them to come. Like it's going to an event is expensive, and this is not a cheap event. Palm Springs is not the easiest place to get to. It's 3 or 4 days of your life. And I always ask people like, hey, what made you decide to take a flyer on this? And at least half of the people came because other members in the community convinced them it was a good idea. So to me, just seeing that was a good reminder of like, okay, hey, I think we've moved beyond community as this buzzword at events and, you know, on HubSpot blog posts and things like this, where it's actually becoming something that can drive real value and outcomes and financial performance for your business if you take the long approach. All right, takeaway number 4, being early is becoming an increasingly large advantage. So if you think about tech, like we're in the middle of this AI, just, you know, extravaganza, cornucopia at the table. You could spend your entire waking hours. Maybe you are diving deep on AI tools and programming and learning all the stuff. In tech, I would say being early is not always an asset, right? Like if you look at the winners in new industries from a technological perspective, the first people there are often not the winners. They're often the people that are iterating, spending too much, losing, and then people, maybe some of the smarter, wiser money or brands come in after the field is really, you know, kind of they figured out what works, what doesn't, and then they come in and capitalize. Same thing for AI too, right? I don't think necessarily spending all your time learning every single thing that comes out on the cutting edge is going to serve you well. You got to be really careful. But when it comes to new markets, new verticals, new spaces, I think it is a huge deal and a huge advantage to be an early mover. I think this goes from industries, but also just to niche products. I mean, I talked to numerous people who had built amazing businesses. They've been doing this. They built their moat. They, like we've talked about, you know, they've built that size and advantage. And when you ask them, hey, how much easier would it be to do this today? You know, they're very frank. They're like, this would be so much harder to do today. And so I think that's really worth thinking when you're thinking about getting into new markets. It's easy to think that hard work is all that matters, and that's hugely important, of course, but picking the right wave is pretty critical too. And so I think there's a big advantage for picking something where there's not a bunch of incumbents, and you got to be a little more selective, but these are always popping up, right? There's always new markets. There's always new interesting things and product verticals and niche verticals coming up in the e-com space. So, you know, everyone's got their criteria for what they would want to see in a new e-com business. And I think a market growing market without a lot of entrenched legacy players is a pretty big advantage that I hadn't really thought. I hadn't given as much weight as I should have, but changed my mind after this event. And then finally, number 5, and maybe this is no kidding, Andrew. Thanks for the obvious newsflash. The 5th takeaway for me was that quality of your product really matters. We have been in this space where for a long time you could potentially get in and hack distribution and advertising and things like that, just from knowing how to do it, from doing it well. And a lot of that alpha, I think, is being eroded away. And what's left is like quality brand and quality product. And product quality, I mean, granted, if you had to pick between having an average product exceptionally well marketed and a phenomenal product that had terrible marketing, I think in the short to medium term, I would take the excellent marketed product. But in the long term, I would take the product that had exceptional quality. If you think about like product quality is upstream of everything, right? It's with a better quality product, you can market it better with better creative. You have better word of mouth referrals. You have better repeat business. And this is a huge one. You have better margins. Like you can't, you know, I'm thinking of one business in particular that they had exceptional. They were able to charge insane markups, high AOV, and also had phenomenal margins because they built something that was just leading in class for their category. Anyway, all of that stuff comes from quality, from a product quality. So anyway, again, probably you're thinking, hey, this is you know, not a news flash, but I do think this is something that's just getting more and more and more important, especially if you want to build a meaningful, durable business in the space. All right, so those are my big takeaways again. And this is kind of a fast episode. I don't want to necessarily, you know, beat you over the head with these, but the big ones, of course, number one, there's no big tactical secrets for these large store owners. They're just, they're in the weeds. They're doing it for a long time. They care about what they're doing. Businesses are getting bigger. The bigger are getting bigger, and it's an advantage to have that size, especially today. I think that kind of speaks to sticking with something if you can over time. Community is actually starting to play a real meaningful role in delivering outsized financial outcomes for brands. Being early is a huge advantage when you don't have to fight a bunch of entrenched incumbents, and quality of product matters even more than ever. So a few thank yous. Thank you to everyone who came out and flew out to, you know, Palm Springs, especially those on the East Coast and internationally. Man, we had some people come from all over the world. It was pretty cool to see. Thank you to all our speakers. Thank you to our team. Big thanks to Audrey, to Patrick, to Dana, to Craig, to everyone who came out and helped put this on. And if this sounds fun to you and you want to join, come join us in the Econ Fuel community. We've got a group of eight, a special section, we've got the whole community, but then we have a subsection for our 8 and 9 figure members where they can talk about things as well as meet up in person. Forging what matters. I want to share something that, you know, this is how I share a few thoughts that I kicked off Ecom Camp with the first night over dinner and welcomed folks. It all kind of happened on my way there, actually. I connected through Salt Lake to get to Palm Springs. And I tend to be someone who lives a little dangerously at the airport. I like showing up with, like, you know, 35 minutes. I like seeing how close to the boarding I can show up without wasting time. And I probably tend to cut my connections a little close to, you know, I'll look at connections when I'm booking flights and I'm like, 35 minutes, I'm good. We'll be good to go. Finally caught up with me, and a slight delay caused me to miss my flight in Salt Lake. And so I headed downtown and I knew exactly where I was going to go. I headed to this dive sushi bar. And to paint a picture of it, it's, you have to go down these steps. It's in this kind of like dark, slightly musty basement. It's a half Irish pub, half sushi bar, which tells you probably everything you need to know about the quality of the sushi there. Cheap rolls, super cheap warm beer. You know, why would I go there on a layover? Well, when I started my very first business, e-com business, it was actually in Salt Lake City. I was living there with my, at the time, girlfriend, now wife, Annie, and kicked off the business. I remember, you know, working in this tiny room with like four roommates on an old, you know, one of those white clamshell MacBooks, building the business from scratch, like 10-hour days, just kind of grinding, this panic that I wasn't going to get enough done, but until before my runway money ran out. And, you know, things were lean, right? And so this sushi bar was a place we went because it was cheap. The food was reasonable for the price, at least. They had a great happy hour. And, you know, so I have a lot of fond memories there. And as I was sitting eating sushi in the bar during, you know, this unexpected layover, the thing that stood out to me even more than kind of the hustle of those times was just the uncertainty of that time. Like, I remember having no idea if things were going to work out, if I was crazy. I remember when I told my mom that I was quitting this, you know, kind of high profile fancy finance job to go sell, you know, kind of random junk on the internet, the skepticism was thick. A lot of questioning. And I didn't know, like, I was going to take a swing, but I was uncertain. I mean, I remember getting the first order I ever got, which was like this huge high point. Everyone remembers that. And then I remember 3 or 4 days later, maybe it was a week later, the crushing blow that came when it was returned, right? Like all of the air just out of the sails, and then you go even lower than before. And I think, you know, coming to this group of really successful 8 and 9 figure store owners, it's easy to forget, whether you're in that group or whether you've got a business that you've got off the ground and is cranking maybe a year or two in, or whether maybe even you've just been, you know, leveling up your own financial and e-com and entrepreneurial skills and you've yet to start something. I think it's very easy to forget how we felt and where we were in the early days. Like, we're really good. Entrepreneurs are very good at identifying a goal, charging at it with full force, getting there, and then moving on to the next goal. Like, that's how you build things, and that's how you make progress. And that's the upside. The downside is very rarely do we actually sit down and say, hey, man, I've, like, very rarely do we sit down and appreciate how far we've come. So that was one of the things I tried to encourage a lot of these members that were joining at Ecom Camp to do. And wherever you are in your journey to, would encourage you to do the same, because it's important to do. It's really important to do. It feels good. It's fun. And it helps you, you know, not just totally burn out. So yeah, it was a really good time in Salt Lake having some sushi in those old stomping grounds. One final thing, 4 in 10 seven and eight figure store owners have less than 12 months of financial runway. That means a bad tariff surprise, an algorithm change, or one rough quarter could be existential. These aren't startups. These are real businesses that look solid on the surface. The difference between the ones with 4 months of runway and the ones sitting on 9 years of cash cushion on the bank usually comes down to financial fluency. At least that's what our research shows. There's a huge correlation between how well you know your numbers and how much safety cushion you have in the bank. If that makes you a little uncomfortable, the Financial Mastery Series is probably worth your time. It's a free course built for e-com owners that you can grab at ecommercefuel.com/mastery. And if you want a peer group of 7 and 8 figure owners who think about this stuff every day at a high level, make sure to check out our community at ecommercefuel.com. Work hard, venture often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.